be joined by Isaac Romero. He's the Associated Students of the University of New Mexico president. And we'll also be joined at about 20 past the hour by Dr. Terry Babbitt, Associate Vice President for Enrollment Management at the University. If you would like to join in our discussion today, there are several ways for you to participate. You may email comments to callinshow@kunm.org. You may post comments on the Call-In Show webpage, again at kunm.org, or you may call us. Our local number is 277-5866. That's 277-KUNM. Or use our toll-free number, 1-877-899-5866, with questions and comments. So, Astrid, I discovered you when I began researching this topic, blogging on the web, and it was sort of refreshing to see a reporter who was writing stories as well as blogging. And you cover UNM and higher education for the journal. Mm-hmm. And so you realize that most people in New Mexico, students and citizens, have gotten used to tuition increases at the University of New Mexico. They literally happen every year. But right. this hike that was just approved by the Regents on April 9th came with a twist, a change in the tuition structure. What was that change? Can you describe that for us, please?
Right. So what the university is doing is they're unblocking basically the way they charge for tuition. Prior to this, you paid one price if you're a full-time student, which is anything more than 12 hours. So 12 to 18 hours was the same price. So if you're a student who wanted to take 15 hours, those 3 credit hours were basically free. This changes a little bit. It's a threefold. It's meant to encourage students to take more than 12 hours, because if you take more than 12 hours, if you take more than 15 hours, your price per credit hour is lower than if you take less. So there's that kind of economic incentive. And the goal is to not only to get students to graduate faster, but also maybe help them accrue less debt as they go through college. Another is to start charging for these courses that the university was basically giving for free.
So if you took 15 hours, you paid the same price as if you took 18 or 21, even if you wanted to.
Right.
Okay.
Uh-huh.
All right. And so was there controversy behind this decision?
There was, the first time that it was brought up, at least in a public meeting, was at the university's budget summit, which was just a few days before the big Regents meeting where they voted for this. And when it came up, a few Regents were pretty hesitant. They were concerned that the university was going to alienate students who couldn't take 15 hours, students who work, who have other obligations. The increase for students who are not going to be able to take 15 hours is pretty steep. It's about 13.2%. So there were definitely concerns from some Regents and definitely from some of the student representatives.
So it's about 13.2% if you take fewer than 15 credit hours. What's the increase if you take more?
It's about 9.9%.
9.9%. Mm-hmm. So, I looked at a few figures and I saw that in 10 years, tuition and fees have doubled.
Right.
In 15 years, they've increased by 170%.
Right.
When you, I don't know if you had an opportunity to go out onto the campus after this Regents meeting, but when you did, and if you did you come
yes.
in contact with students, and what were they saying?
I did, and that's one of my favorite parts of my job is just getting to talk to actual students. So I walk around kind of like a crazy person around the sub just trying to get people to talk to me. What I hear from most students is just this frustration. They think that it doesn't seem to stop. And there's a lot of concerns about how they're going to be able to afford this in the long run.
It's funny because I was looking at your blog from very recently about the Doña Ana students suing for breach of contract. And the lawyer in me said, huh, is there a contract? Students go into the university. I don't know what their expectations are about what tuition will be for the time that they're there.
Right.
Is there any sense that people feel sort of betrayed?
in my conversations with people, I'd never heard anybody use that specific word. So I couldn't speculate on that. But okay. There definitely is a level of frustration. And I think that when Isaac gets in here, he can tell you from the student perspective that, you know, sometimes maybe students don't feel as heard as they would like to feel.
Okay. All right. Well, let's put some real sort of dollar numbers on this, if you have them. I don't know if you have them.
Yes.
So if a student is taking more than 15 credit hours, what's the total in tuition and fees this coming year?
They would be paying $6,447.
And if they're taking fewer than 15 credit hours?
They'd be paying $6,846.
So pretty much a $400 difference. Is that accurate?
Correct.
And you know, there's so many ways to look at this situation. You know, students incurring debt, students having to pay activity fees. Tell us a little bit of what this increase is for. What will it be funding?
That's a great question. So probably the biggest thing is faculty salary increases. Faculty and staff actually had not gotten raises for 4 years. And they're paid well below average in terms of kind of national averages. And so faculty is going to get a 3% raise in salary. Staff is going to get 1%. And then they're also going to get a one-time supplemental payment of $1,000.
Well, let me read a quotation here from President Frank, in response to raising the salary for the faculty. He said, "If we don't find a way to do this, we'll continue to lose our faculty. We'll simply have no competitive faculty to be a research university. We'll become a community college." Is there any evidence that that's been happening without this increase?
It's very anecdotal, but you always hear the provost talking about, constantly hearing about professors who are leaving to universities that, you know, maybe some people would not consider ideal, but they pay more. You know, people going to Utah, people going kind of all over the country because they're paying more money than UNM can pay them. And in fact, about a year ago, I did write about, a report did come out, I think it was the Chronicle of Higher Education had gathered data for faculty salaries around the country, and it did show that UNM ranked pretty low in comparison to its peers.
Well, like, just as an example, when we say pretty low, I mean, can we put a dollar figure or at least a percentage amount on how much lower they might be than the national average?
I can't. I'm sure okay. Terry could.
Okay. When he gets here, we'll ask him. All right. So we've got faculty salaries, an increase in faculty salaries.
Right.
What else is being funded by the increase?
So we've got a number of kind of initiatives. They also set aside money to hire more faculty.
Oh, and there's a new dean for the honors program. Is that
right? And they're hiring a new dean. Let's see. They've got this new program. I'm blanking on the name exactly. It's like something about global funding, but they're trying to attract more international students. So they allocated some money for this kind of new program that's going to focus on all things international students and helping students from here study abroad, et cetera.
Is staff getting an increase as well?
Yeah, staff is getting a 1% raise.
Okay.
And then the $1,000 supplemental pay, which is a one-time thing.
Okay. Let me go ahead and tell you all that today we're discussing the recent tuition and fees hike at the University of New Mexico. Currently in the studio with me is Astrid Galvan. She is an Albuquerque Journal reporter covering UNM and higher education. We'll be joined by a member of the administration, Dr. Terry Babbitt, Associate Vice President for Enrollment Management at the University, and the student body president of UNM, Isaac Romero, when they get here. You certainly can call us to join in our conversation at 277-5866. Or our toll-free number, 1-877-899-5866, with your questions and comments. Now, so we've got a salary increase for faculty. We've got a staff increase of 1% and a one-time payment. And now there were some fees increases as well, and those were somewhat controversial, were they not, Astrid?
Yeah, there was a slight increase in the amount that students pay in fees towards athletics. That was controversial, again, for the second year in a row. Probably there's more years, but the second year that I've been here. And the basic concept is that the university administration and athletics, they feel that they don't get enough in funding through student fees. And so that actually, that number has doubled in just the last 2 years. And this year in particular, you know, students, at least the student representatives, were pretty upset about that.
Okay. Well, let's go ahead and take our first caller. We have a caller, Kathy, from Albuquerque. She is a professor at UNM. Welcome, Kathy, to the program. Welcome, Kathy, to our program.
Hi.
Hi, Kathy. Thank you for joining us.
Oh, thanks for having me on.
Sure. What would you like to talk about today?
Well, I've been listening to the comments about the faculty increases and the salary increases, and I'm an associate professor at UNM. And I just wanted to comment on what Dr. Frank's quote was, as well as Astrid's, about the need for those faculty increases. And I'll tell you, I am one of those professors who has gone looking elsewhere because the salaries here are so low. I did a study myself for positions such as the one that I have, and looked at people who are in comparable positions at universities in the area and at universities that have recruited me, and the mean and median salary differential between what I make at UNM and what I could make if I go somewhere else was $20,000. So that's what we're talking about when we're talking about faculty salary increases. So we are losing a significant number of great faculty members who are productive researchers. And, of course, a lot of what we do at the university is about students and is about making sure that we're doing a great job teaching our classes and educating our students. I think a piece that is often missing in the media, in the local media, about what UNM is really all about is the incredible research that we do here and the value of that to our UNM community, to Albuquerque, to the state of New Mexico, but also nationally and internationally. And if we're going to be, as Dr. Frank said, more than just a community college, we have got to be supportive of our great research faculty, and we have to pay them. Otherwise, they're going to leave.
Well, Kathy, just a quick follow-up question to you. Is there any one area more than another that at least anecdotally you've heard professors are leaving? Any?
Well, what I know of, I'm in the College of Arts and Sciences, and I don't want to misquote because I forget what the number is, but when I actually went and interviewed somewhere else this past year and was offered a salary increase of well over $20,000 a year. If you looked at the big picture and included everything, it was more like $30,000 plus. And one of the pieces of information that came back was that I was one of, and I might get this number wrong, but somewhere between, you know, 30-plus other professors in our college who were out looking for jobs and looking for counteroffers to try to get an increase here to allow us to stay.
Okay, and is 3% enough to get you to stay?
Absolutely not. Absolutely not. Not even close.
All right. Well,
I mean, if you look at the actual dollar amount that 3% raises, for it's in the neighborhood, depending on what you make, we're talking about $2,000 as opposed to $20,000 plus. So it's not even coming close. And when you put that on top of the fact that as much as it's really hard for students to look at, oh, my gosh, I've got a 10, 13% increase in my tuition, what's happening at the same time, if you look at the, I think as Astrid was already talking about, if you look nationally at our tuition, it's very low compared to other land-grant universities, other public universities. We are still behind the curve when it comes to tuition. And we tend to look just at ourselves just inside the state. But if we're going to be a true university and a research university, we have to look beyond that.
Well,
context needs to be broader.
And thank you, Kathy. Thank you for your call today, and thank you for leading me into what I wanted to ask the listeners. Is UNM tuition too cheap? Should it cost more? In my research, I found that it's about $2,000 lower than the average public university tuition. So call us and let us know what you think. Is the tuition too cheap? Should it cost more? Let's go ahead and bring in another caller. It's John on the line, also from Albuquerque. Good morning, John. Good morning, John. Hello, John. Nope, John isn't. Is John there? John is not there. Let's go ahead and bring in Ronald from Albuquerque. Ronald, good morning. Thank you for joining our discussion.
Hello.
Hi, Ronald.
Thanks for talking to me.
Sure.
I've been listening about the salary thing, you know, reminds me of, well, gee, where the money is where the priority is. And we're talking about the value to the state and to the country of the research done here. But I was trying to figure out if there's any sort of figures, how much money does the highest paid research professor, teaching professor make, and then what fraction of the, or how many of the athletic coaches earn more than the highest researching and teaching person to give us the kind of results that we had with our dearly departed football coach and then our recently departed basketball coach. I wouldn't leave you, I wouldn't leave you. Oh, notice the mistletoe on the tail of my shirt, kiss it on my way out, because I make a whole lot more money somewhere else, despite my professed loyalty. I think we got screwed,
well,
and for the students paying these fees.
Let's see if Astrid can address it. Astrid, do you have any sense of what a top research professor is paid here at the university?
Yeah, I haven't looked at the numbers in about a year, but I can tell you probably maybe the top research faculty will probably be, if you're talking about Chisholm campus, will probably be in engineering, and we're probably talking about maybe $150,000 a year on average for some of those top research instructors.
And that's certainly significantly less than coaches get paid. And, you know, recently I saw a map of the country. It was an interesting map, and it said,
right,
who is your highest
yeah.
paid
state?
I just
pulled that up.
Who is your highest? Yeah, talk
I
to
just
that
pulled
a little
it up
bit.
On my,
what do you see?
Right. So it found basically that this, I think it was Inside Higher Ed, found that coaches' salaries have way outpaced faculty salaries growth. And so specifically in the Mountain West Conference, which UNM is a part of, football coach salaries specifically grew by 69% from 2005 to 2011. And faculty salaries grew by 17%, which also has been questioned. Faculty Senate President Amy Neal, in fact, at the Regents meeting on Tuesday, thought that 17% figure looked a little big. But yeah, I mean, absolutely, these people in athletics, specifically coaches, has definitely outpaced faculty salaries.
Yeah. Now, if you're a current UNM student, tell us how the higher tuition and fees will impact you. You can call us at 277-5866. That's 277-KUNM. Or you can use our toll-free number. We're at 1-877-899-5866. You can also email your comments to callinshow@KUNM.org. Or you may post your comments on the KUNM Call-In Show webpage, also on KUNM.org. Astrid, one thing you and I spoke about leading up to this program was mounting student debt.
Correct.
And one of the rationales for this hike, and I apologize, Dr. Babbitt is not here yet, we'll get into this with him, was that it will help to reduce student debt mm-hmm. overall. You know, even the New York Times did an article last week following a particular teacher. Talk to us a little bit about, I know you've studied the project on students' debts.
Right.
Materials. Tell us a little bit about what you're finding about student debt nationally and then here in New Mexico.
Right. So right now, student debt has surpassed the $1 trillion mark and has surpassed credit card debt in the country, which is pretty astonishing. And that, you know, that's raised a lot of concern on pretty much every level. But I've looked at numbers specifically at UNM, again, because it does have cheaper tuition rates than most of the universities in the country. Students don't accrue as much debt, and not as many accrue debt. That, you know, part of that also has to do with the lottery scholarship, which is really helpful. It pays for 100% of tuition, although it doesn't pay for fees. But if you look at the numbers, and this is based on the class of 2011, that's the last available data that I have. The national average of students who have student debt is 66%. At UNM, that's 46%. So that's significantly lower. And also nationally, students usually graduate with about $26,000 in debt. At UNM, that's about a little less than $18,000.
It's a significant difference, but it may be a difference without an immense difference in the long run.
Right.
So So what, if, when you're talking with the administration and they're talking about this reducing student debt, how do they see that actually happening? I mean, how is it going to reduce student debt?
That's a great question, because it obviously cannot be achieved by lowering tuition. I think the big part of this kind of drive to get students to graduate faster, it's, you know, it's a cost savings, but it's also a way for them to graduate with less debt. So I think that that's one big component. I think another one that, you know, I haven't written about a whole lot, but it's talked about quite a bit, is that UNM requires 128 credit hours to graduate, and most colleges require 120.
And, you know, when Dr. Babbitt gets here, I wanted to ask him about that. I saw that in your blog. Let's go ahead and bring in our next caller. It's Lee from Albuquerque. Good morning, Lee. Good morning, Lee.
Good morning. Can you hear me?
Yes, absolutely. How are you today?
I'm okay. Comment is related to, like, the affordability of education these days. When I got out of the Army in 1974, I went to UNM under the GI Bill, and the full-time tuition back then was $300 per semester. So that'd be like $600 a year for full-time tuition, right?
Right.
Well, the minimum wage back then was maybe $3.25, something like that. Now it's a little bit more than double that. So in other words, the minimum wage has doubled, but the cost of tuition has gone up 10 times that.
Mm.
So there's no comparison, if you see what I'm saying.
Yes, absolutely. So people have to have a bigger investment in their education, is what you're saying.
Right. I mean, there's no such thing. It would be almost impossible to work your way through college these days, let's put it that way. You know, unless you're a drug dealer or something, which I was, but that's beside the point. Yeah.
All right, Lee, thanks for your call today and for pointing that out. Astrid, when you go around and talk to students, do you find that some are even questioning the benefit of going to college or going to a university?
Not in my personal experience. I've read about it a lot, and the Chronicle of Higher Education, you know, has a ton of opinion pieces about that. The value, you know, is a college worth the investment that it takes? But I can't say that I personally know students who question going to college.
Yeah, and I've seen some studies where people say even in the long run, even with debt,
right,
it's still a benefit.
You know, the New York Times story that you were talking about mentioned even with, you know, the intense amount of debt that most college students are going to accrue these days, they're still much better off than someone who's not college educated in terms of the job market.
Okay. Let's bring in our next caller. It's Colleen from Albuquerque. Good morning, Colleen.
Good morning. Thank you for taking my call.
You're welcome.
I wanted to respond to the faculty member who had mentioned, the 30 people who from the arts and sciences who were also applying for the job that she was. And she had compared the salary of faculty here to other colleges. And I just wanted to point out that, you know, the state of New Mexico is already one of the poorest states in the United States. So just because you're getting more money somewhere else doesn't mean you're actually going to have a better, you're going to be in a better position, just because wherever you are, you also have to take into consideration the cost of living. So if you move to California and you get a $10,000 increase, you know, but you're living somewhere, I don't know, San Francisco, you're probably paying a lot more for just living and so that's, I don't think, you know, comparing salaries of faculty without taking into account the cost of living is fair. The other thing I want to say is for students, because I'm a student at UNM, I'm actually a grad student, and I think the students who are actually taking community college level courses in high school and also for their basic core requirements, that's what I'm telling people to do. You know, people who are in high school, I'm telling them, don't even waste your time, because It's just about money. And if you want to get a good education, go to the community college, get your basics out of the way, decide what you want to do before you start spending a lot of money on your education. Then you won't be in debt. That's the smart way to go about it. And that's what I'm saying as a graduate student. That's all I wanted to say.
So no, and Colleen, hang on a second. Maybe you have some knowledge about this, because in speaking with someone yesterday, I was told that many times people will take a heavy load over at CNM and graduate from there with their associate's degree. And then when they apply to UNM, a lot of those credits are not transferred and they are sort of behind the eight ball. They might have thought they would only have 2 years left to complete at UNM, but they end up having more to complete. Is that something you're aware of? Any sense of that?
I'm not sure. I'm just basically talking about the core requirements, you know, like the English 101, math, things like that, to get them where they need to be, you know, so that way they're not, instead of spending $400 on, you know, English 101, I mean, go to CNM and, you know, spend less on the same class that might even be taught by the same instructor, because, well, they're not making enough at UNM. I don't know. But I've also heard that there are the same instructors who teach at UNM also teach at CNM.
People looking for work. All right, Colleen, thank you.
And we're not rich, you know, in this part of the world. So, you know, do what you need to do to save money. That's all I'm going to say.
Thanks, Colleen. Good luck in your own educational career. All right, let's bring up another caller. Let's go right to Howard. He's also from Albuquerque. Howard, you wanted to add to our discussion today. Thank you for calling.
Like some other folks, I don't have research at my fingertips because I'm actually sitting in a parking lot. But there's been at least two studies that I know of done recently that correlate the rise in numbers of administrators. Your reporter mentioned that they're hiring a new dean for the honors program. That there's been a rise in the numbers as well as a rise in salaries of administrators, especially in public universities and specifically land-grant universities across the country, that correlates with the exponential rise in tuition. You know, as much as we complain about government in this country, we always over-administrate the heck out of everything. And I see that as an enormous problem with colleges, because you end up with people, administrators specifically, who are so divorced from the reality of being a student. No matter how much they say they understand, they don't understand. Because the same administrators will say, students demand color TV and cables in each dorm room. I don't know if that happens at UNM, but I've heard this argument in a previous state where I've lived. And that's simply not true. They make this stuff up. And, you know, I'd like to see some accountability on the part of administrators for a change, instead of them being the very, very narrow filter through which money and information travels to the legislature and money travels back to the university. Mm.
Howard, thank you for your comments today. We're discussing the recent tuition and fees hike at the University of New Mexico. You can certainly join in our discussion. You can reach us by telephone, 277-5866, or 1-877-899-5866. You can also post comments online. We're going to take a quick break now, and we'll be back with you in a minute.
Traffic and road rage can really be stressful. A little extra time and money can bring relaxation and a smile. Try ride sharing by carpool, vanpool, or bus and chill a while. Instead of getting in the car to go to work or class, travel smart. Try walking, biking, ride sharing, or transit. Might like it. Learn more at cleanenergynm.org. A message from the tax-exempt U.S. Department of Energy and the New Mexico Energy Conservation and Management Division. Established in 1929, UNM Press is a well-known and respected publisher in the fields of anthropology, archaeology, indigenous studies, Latin American history, American studies, Chicana and Chicano studies, art and architecture, and the history, literature, ecology, and cultures of the American West. For more information, please visit unmpress.com. A message from the tax-exempt University of New Mexico Press. Maybe you plan to donate that old car or truck to KUNM for some time now, but just haven't gotten around to it. Well, this is the perfect time, because if you call today, we can tow it away, sell it, and get the proceeds in before the fiscal year ends June 30th. That old car or truck could be just the thing that pushes KUNM's budget into the black. So please don't wait anymore. Call 888-KUNM-CAR. That's 888-586-6227. And thanks.
Good morning and welcome back to the KUNM Call-In Show. I'm Kathleen Sabo, and today we're discussing the recent tuition and fees hikes at the University of New Mexico. I've been sitting in the studio here with Astrid Galvan. She is an Albuquerque Journal reporter covering UNM and higher education. And now we've been joined during our break by Dr. Terry Babbitt, the Associate Vice President for Enrollment Management at the University. Good morning, Dr. Babbitt.
Good morning.
Good morning. And so we've been having a lively discussion with callers, and you probably didn't get the benefit of that. So let me start you off by asking you a question. Under your umbrella as the Associate Vice President for Enrollment Management, you have registration, financial aid, admissions, student success initiatives. In considering the change in tuition structure, were you asked to make projections about the effect of the hikes upon students?
Well, that's part of every review on an annual tuition structure cycle, and we do take that into account. There are there's an impact, obviously, on students at different levels. Well, we look at a lot of data that is aggregate and by individual groups. So we do look at the impact, and it can't be fully projected because you don't know every individual student situation. But we do try to take into account the hardships and difficulties that this kind of action takes, particularly on the neediest students.
Now, Isaac Romero's not here yet. He's the student body president. But in talking with him yesterday, he brought up an interesting segment of the population, seniors, who have just a few, and whatever, however you classify a senior these days, but who just have 6 to 9 credits left to take, and all of a sudden they're looking at a larger increase than they expected, and yet they sort of are in a bind. They can't really transfer at this point, or they could. But talk to me about that situation. Is that a situation that you forecasted would appear on the horizon?
Sure. We have the primary thing is that we have financial aid available to assist students. The students in the 6-hour range have about a $200 semester increase. And if they apply for needs analysis through the free application for federal student aid and have need, there is substantial funds set aside to assist those students. And particularly students who are trying to graduate, they need to go through the process, and we have plans to assist them if they have and do indeed have the need.
Let's go ahead and bring in our next caller. It is Brooke from Albuquerque. Good morning, Brooke. Thank you for joining our discussion.
Hi. I just wanted to comment on the question you asked earlier on whether the tuition is too low at UNM. And I don't have UNM's budget in front of me, but I know when I had a child as a early college student, I moved to New Mexico in part because I could afford to go to school and work and stay home part-time with my child. And I know that UNM has a very high population of non-traditional students like me who are either returning to school, have families, have outside work. And I feel like this setup of tuition increases with more for taking less kind of punishes non-traditional students and throws out of balance the focus on the actual population they're serving.
Well, Dr. Babbitt, how would you respond? Thank you, Brooke, for your call. How would you respond to
Brooke?
Well,
I think Brooke has a legitimate concern. I mean, that's something that, again, we just discussed that we also reviewed. We do have a very disparate population at UNM that runs the gamut of 76-year-old seniors and seniors in college who are traditional age and just about all of our beginning freshmen, 99%, are 18 years old that are looking for a traditional college experience that we want to graduate earlier than they are currently. So there are legitimate concerns, and it's hard to serve, every aspect of the population 100%. We value part-time students. We value adult students. We value non-traditional students. And, again, we want to assist them, and a substantial part of the financial aid assistance that we set aside will go to part-time students. Many schools commit their financial aid to full-time students because that's what they're evaluated on graduation rates. We will commit financial assistance to our part-time student population and non-traditional student population if they have the demonstrated need.
So we have another caller online, and thank you for responding, Dr. Babbitt. We have Lori on the line from Albuquerque. Lori, good morning. Thank you for adding to our discussion today.
Good morning. Hello, everybody. I've been educated in the state, as have my children. I have a bachelor's and a master's degree from UNM, and I have another master's degree from New Mexico State University. My children, my three children all went to UNM as well. One of them has a bachelor's degree. And my comment is that I believe that for the salaries that we make in New Mexico that really are lower than, I don't know, any other place that pays a lower salary, maybe Mississippi, as we've heard, you know, might pay a lower salary. But we opt to stay in the state because this is our home, and we're having lower salaries. And even after we get a degree, the kind of money that we can make proportionately, as the associate professor alluded to earlier, is much lower in this state. And so, you know, the burden that we take on a student loan, proportionately to what we make, is actually pretty high. So I think that this current increase is really unfair to the citizens of New Mexico. And I know we're trying to, you know, aspire to be like Texas and Arizona and Utah, but, you know, but we're not, and we haven't been. All of the energy has been put into governmental jobs, federal jobs, and education. So that's my comment. Thank you so much for listening.
Thank you, Lori, for joining us. Dr. Babbitt, would you like to respond?
thank you, Lori. That is a good comment, and that does come up every year during the budget discussion as well. We are not a state that is known for being wealthy, obviously, and when we compare to our peers, the 22 peers that we mention often, the states are different. There are different economic situations. There are different populations. We look at an indicator that is the tuition percentage of median household income as one of the evaluations we go through. Right now, our tuition is about 13% of median household income. Our peers is at about 16 to 17%. So again, those are averages. You have populations in New Mexico that are very different, that have high incomes depending on where they work, and many that have lower incomes. But on the average, our tuition is a lower percentage of the median household income. And again, that doesn't discount the individual struggles, but that's one of the indicators that we look at when we compare to peers.
So during the last caller, we had our last guest slip in here. He's Isaac Romero. He is the UNM student body president. Good morning, Isaac. Thank you for coming in today.
Good morning. Thank you for having me.
You're welcome. So you've been the student body president for just a matter of days. Congratulations, by the way.
Thank you. You've
been at UNM for some time. Will you be a senior coming up in this next year?
Yeah, I'll be entering my senior year in the fall.
Okay. And when I was, again, reading, researching for this topic, some of the quotations I saw from administration were that there needs to be a change in culture or a shift in culture with regard to the time students take to graduate. Can you speak to your experience with the university culture surrounding the time one stays in school before graduating?
Sure. So from my perspective, apologies, I'm a little sick. It starts in the orientation phase with students. I think I had a great orientation. I went through the college enrichment program, and that provided me the opportunities to get the advising I needed, the prep for college life, and everything like that. And then it also comes to just all of the other programs that are provided to students that are not non-academic. So the support systems, such as if the students that live on in the residence halls, or Greek life, or the other student activities that are there to provide support. So I think it's important for students to take advantage of those, as some of their fees do go to those as well.
Is there a push when you first enter to get people to graduate in 4 years? Is that something that's specifically spoken about, or is that your experience?
Yeah, yes, absolutely. There's a packet that students are provided on entrance of UNM. It has your program. All the programs are laid out there. It shows you what classes you need to take and when, and that provides you the 4 year opportunity to graduate on time if you take those courses.
Tell us what you think. Is nudging students to graduate in 4 years realistic in New Mexico, or is it treating the symptom or the cause? You can call us at 277-5866. That's 277-KUNM, or 1-877-899-5866. You may email comments to callinshow@kunm.org. You may also post comments on the Call In Show webpage. So let's go ahead and bring in another call. It is Alfonso from Santa Fe. Alfonso, you have a daughter at UNM?
No, I have a daughter about to graduate, and we're looking into that possibility of going to UNM, and I've been surprised with the tuition price compared to other states, okay? So I know it's a big gap differential, and UNM looks very affordable compared to other places, but like other callers say, if you don't make enough money here, doesn't matter how cheap it is, it's going to still expensive, right? So it's a situation where this state, we are unfortunately one of the very last ones in economics in the country. But let me tell you a situation. When my daughters were little, we used to pay 10, 12 years ago, like $1,000 a month for daycare, because my wife and I both work full-time, okay? So $1,000 a month was like $12,000 a year. Then they were able to go to elementary school, went to Santo Niño. Back then, it was around $700 a month, all right? Mm-hmm. So still, and then now they go to San Michael's High School, and we pay around $9,000. And now we're looking into UNM, and you guys talking about $7,000 a year, you know? So for me, it's like, oh, the older they get, it's like, wow, it's less expensive. What's going on? But when you are trying to achieve a higher education and you start looking to outsource outside the state, you're looking in $30,000, $40,000 a year. And I have two daughters, so it will be impossible to pay $60,000 a year for somebody just in tuition if you were thinking to go to out of the state. You know what I mean?
Yes, and Alfonso, thank you. I mean, you bring up 2 points, the rising cost of education everywhere, especially private universities, and then the rising costs of other expenses that people have to pay. Anyone want to respond to Alfonso?
I'm happy to, Alfonso. I understand that plight is difficult. And essentially what you've laid out is one of the challenges, particularly on the higher education side. I mean, childcare complicates that. You know, choosing to go to private school is an individual decision that people do for various reasons, but that certainly took up a large expense. And then on the higher education side, the crux of the argument is higher education worth it? And that's the national debate. That's why a tuition increase at UNM in this particular time and era is under more scrutiny. And higher education is worth it. I mean, the data will continue to indicate that. There's nothing that people can counter with on the earnings side. There are certainly a lot of qualitative arguments about that particular subject. But, you know, higher education is going to have to become as affordable as possible to get credentials and employability jobs out there. I think at UNM, we realize we're not going to just continuously raise tuition until we get to our peer rates and get by that way. That's not our intent, but that will mean changes in our model as well. So I think Alfonso's statement is indicative of the challenge of higher education across the country, and we're all going to have to change.
Let's bring in our next caller. It's Nancy from Albuquerque. Good morning, Nancy. Thank you for joining our discussion.
Good morning. I just have a brief comment I'd like to bring up the remarks you made about transferring credits from the community college to the university. I when I attended college, I was one of those kids that had to go to the community college. And although I've lived in the state 30 years, this was back in Massachusetts. And at that time, and probably continuing today, the state had what was called a college compact. And so I was guaranteed that if I went to the community college, all of my credits would transfer. So maybe one of your guests can answer your question about that, because if that's not the case, it really does need to be remedied.
All right, Nancy, thank you. And again, Dr. Babbitt, I think you're probably the one to answer this.
Thank you, Nancy. And it is true that articulation has to be strong between two-year schools and four-year schools to make college affordable. All of the kind of the rhetoric about $10,000 degrees and those kinds of programs you hear about in Texas, they have a very substantial amount, at least 2 years of community college work involved in those. In the state of New Mexico, we have legislated articulation for what we call our core requirements, 35 hours that are basic education requirements at all the institutions. They're common, and by law, they are accepted. They have to be accepted for transfer. So there should not be a difficulty with that. What we run into the most challenges with are students who enter a community college and they're undecided about what they want to do. They may not seek advisement early. They may think vocational route is something they're interested in. And there are courses on the technical side that won't transfer. So those aren't part of 35-hour general education requirements. So if you start in a vocational path, then some of those courses obviously won't transfer. But the best thing to do is visiting the community college. Seek advisement early. Get choice if you're unsure what you want to do. Have the advisor, you know, help you get on a path that no matter which way you go, you won't lose credits, and you're taking basic things that are going to transfer for just about any degree. That's the biggest thing we run into is indecision early in the academic career and lack of knowledge.
Isaac, when you and I spoke yesterday in preparation for the show, you brought up the tuition structure will mesh with the lottery scholarship requirements, and you are a lottery scholarship recipient. Is that accurate?
Yes, I am.
And how many credits are you required to take each semester to maintain your scholarship?
So the requirements of the lottery scholarship are a minimum of 12 credit hours per semester, as well as maintaining a 2.5 GPA.
Okay, and so we have, Astrid, the tuition structure that we talked about. It kicks in, the change kicks in at how many credit hours?
15.
So we have, it seems like there's a sort of a gap. Lottery scholarship recipients can take 12 credits. They'll still receive their scholarship. And yet at 15 is when the tuition structure changes. So Dr. Babbitt, I'm wondering if you can address that.
So essentially, you know, the tuition structure hasn't changed the definition of a full-time student for Title IV financial aid or for the lottery scholarship. Those are 12-hour thresholds. And the lottery scholarship does fund 12 hours, and it keeps you eligible for that. And it also funds 15 hours. So if a student takes 12 and they're eligible for the lottery scholarship, they'll be funded, assuming, you know, there's full funding available. And if they take 15, they'll be funded. So at either rate, they're funded.
Well, and I know, but Isaac, you had a quandary about some people actually then getting more money under scholarship. Go ahead and talk to that a little bit.
Sure. So the what I've been looking at is in terms of the numbers of the lottery scholarship versus our tuition is that students that are taking above 15 hours are still receiving lottery scholarship or full tuition at the same time that students that are which is the lower cost, and students that are taking less than 15 hours, so 14 and below, are also receiving full tuition but are being charged more. So in that sense, it's sort of draining the lottery scholarship quicker than what students that are taking more than 15 hours. That's what I was looking at.
Dr. Babbitt.
That's essentially true. Just like students paying tuition, which most of our students do pay tuition and aren't on the lottery scholarship, the incentive is to be at the 15-hour threshold, and that's what we're trying to encourage. So it follows through for the lottery scholarship. There aren't very many students at the 13- and 14-hour course load compared to the 12-hour and the 15-hour, so we're really trying to shift students from the 12-hour to the 15-hour. That's where the bulk of our students have their course loads right now.
And Astrid, as in covering UNM and higher education, did you have an opportunity to be at the legislature at all and listen into those conversations about the lottery scholarship and actions that were taken?
A couple of times, and I have written about the lottery scholarship quite a bit because it, you know, was projected to be in the red by the fall. Which was a pretty big deal. They were looking at potentially eventually having to reduce the amount that they would be able to hand out. The legislature infused the scholarship fund with almost $10 million from the tobacco settlement tax fund. But that's a one-time thing, so next year they're going to be looking at the exact same problem. I would like to point out one interesting thing that I thought Western New Mexico University, they actually did not institute a tuition increase this year for the first time in a pretty long time. And instead, they increased fees by 15%, which is also a pretty staggering increase. But their goal was to not burden the lottery scholarship because since it doesn't cover fees, but it does cover tuition. So their thinking was if we don't increase tuition, we will burden it less, but we will still be able to, you know, make that money through fees.
I suspect there'll be a conversation at the legislature next year about this very issue. Let's go ahead and bring our last caller in for the day. It's Myra from Albuquerque. Myra, with a quick comment or question, please.
Yes, I just wanted to discuss the transition from a community college, specifically here in Albuquerque, CNM, to UNM, and my experience with that. I was a student who attended CNM and then transferred my credits to UNM. And what I found was at CNM, if the student seeks out his or her academic advisor, the academic advisor is able to discuss and show the student what courses are accepted at UNM from the time the student starts college at CNM, and UNM, in my experience, and this was just a few years ago, honors those courses that they have accepted from the time the student begins college at CNM. And what I found was the most cost-effective way to get a four-year degree here in New Mexico from UNM is to attend the community college and take the basic courses, which is what one of the callers was referring to when you all were talking about this previously, like your English 101 and 102, that will meet the associate's portion of a student's liberal arts degree. And then all of those liberal arts courses will transfer to UNM and set the student in a place where he or she can begin the junior college year and then focus on those higher courses depending on which course, you know, which path the student wants to take as far as what degree the student wants to graduate from. And what I found also going through CNM in this process is, number one, the academic advisors at CNM are wonderful, and they really are very helpful. The other thing that I found was that a lot of students were doing what Dr. Babbitt had discussed. They were taking technical courses like certain computer classes and assuming that those technical courses would then transfer
to
UNM.
They were unable to transfer. Yeah, Myra, thank you for that clarification, and that is something that Dr. Babbitt spoke to. And you can hear the music beneath us today. And unfortunately, we're going to have to leave Daniel and Bob on the line. We apologize for not being able to take your call. Thank you to our guest today, Albuquerque Journal reporter Astrid Galvan. Astrid, where can we find your blog online?
If you go to abqjournal.com, just go under blogs and it's under higher education.
Okay. And UNM Associate Vice President Dr. Terry Babbitt. Dr. Babbitt, thank you for coming in for the time that you had.
Thanks for having me.
And a sick UNM student body president, Isaac Romero. Thank you for making yourselves available to our listeners. And thank you, callers, for helping to develop our discussion today. Thanks to our engineer, Marshall Broyles, and our assistant producer, Michael Hess. Andy Lyman has handled our phones today, and Elaine Baumgartel is our executive producer. We will have a preemption of the call-in program next week. We will have State of the Reunion, Coming Home, Stories of Veterans Returning from War. I'm Kathleen Sabo. This has been the KUNM Call-In Show on your public radio station, KUNM, Albuquerque.